News Radio 1240 and 1310 KIUL, Mid-America in the Morning. Back. Good morning and welcome to another beautiful week here in Garden City, Kansas. On the phone with us, we've been covering a lot of political issues, a lot of political events. And one that happened a couple weeks ago, a week or two ago, was the big Glenn Beck rally in D.C., where supposedly 500,000 people showed up. It was a big, quote-unquote, non-political rally. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of excitement there, and a lot of people from all over the country showed up. Our guest this morning, the author of the Blind Vision series, is here to comment a little bit on the rally and what it means to our political realm and what it means to Glenn Beck haters and Glenn Beck lovers. Curtis Greco, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Wonderful. Now, this rallies, what do you think the impact of this rally may have on the country? We've had a lot of people that love Glenn Beck, a lot of people that hate Glenn Beck, but having 500,000 people from all around the country show up to this rally, what do you think that means?
Well, he must be speaking to a voice that clearly has no representation in government as it is today. I mean, think about it. How can a man that is so theoretically polarizing still manage to attract that kind of interest on the part of the public? He must have a message that speaks to people who are looking for that type of representation. For that matter, looking for any representation. And I think that's the great thing about what Glenn Beck is doing. And again, this is not a commentary on, you know, let's rally around Glenn Beck. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the greater question that all Americans should be asking, and that is, what is the role of government, and why is it that government is so offended by people who speak out against it, whether it's Glenn Beck or Sarah Palin or, you know, whoever it is. Mm-hmm. What is it?
I heard Barack Obama after the rally, I saw some column about it saying that he just ignored the rally, that he wasn't taking any of it to heart.
Well, isn't that fabulous? President of the United States, representing 300 million people, and he tells you on radio, tells you on television that you don't matter. He tells you that it's so insignificant, you are so insignificant, that it does not matter enough to him to pay attention to what the public is saying. Particularly curious in light of some of the events of the past year, right? We got health care passed. 70% of the public doesn't want it. They do it anyways. But this is the key. This is what's really fascinating about all of this. And we write about this and discuss it in some of the throughout the book series that I just, the third volume just released. I had recently been asked by somebody who said, you know, Curtis, if you were president of the United States, what would you do to make a dramatic difference in the U.S. economy? Not a difficult question to answer. Seemingly complex issues, certainly across the nation. But he was stunned when I said, you know, the first thing I would do is take a look at the U.S. tax code. I said, with messing and dealing with and addressing this one area of the U.S. government's impact along the or around the country, individual lives, you can make a dramatic change in what happens to this country. But yet, if you look at the political hemisphere and the divisiveness and look at the attention that the policies and practices of government play, they're actually more interested in preserving their right to be in office and not govern and not be leaders and provide leadership. And this is, again, what is very interesting about what Glenn Beck's doing. And I think that what struck me most about the rally was not so much that Glenn Beck held it, but that there was such a deliberate attempt to ignore its impact.
Well, there was another rally down the street, so I heard, from Reverend Al Sharpton, where maybe 1,200 people showed up. And I don't know if it was to counter Glenn Beck's rally or whether it was I don't know. I don't know why he held the rally there, but you're right. As you could see, you know, these are the unspoken people, the silent majority that are actually coming out and starting to show up to these types of rallies.
Yes, I mean, even, Dr. King's, I believe it was granddaughter or grandniece, I'm not sure which one, but spoke at the rally. And this is the fact that, you know, Dr. King's speech, and I highly recommend that, you know, Americans, you know, hopefully we've reached a point where we see one another as human beings, not as color. And I hope that someday people will take the time and listen to Reverend King's I Have a Dream speech. You know, he and there's a recent post on my website on imperfectmessenger.com that talks about this event of Glenn Beck's and makes a commentary on it. But in that post is a link to Reverend King's, Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. And what's fascinating about that speech is that we have always thought that that was a speech about race. It's not. It's a speech that is relevant to all Americans. And we pulled out the section of the speech where he talks about that, and it's bracketed within the website, within that posting. I believe the posting is called Restoring Honor, Simply Speaking. And it's fascinating. He talks about it, and he says, you know, the Declaration of Independence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And I think that, you know, the attempt that Glenn Beck may have coincidentally, surreptitiously, who knows, keyed in on was that it is an inalienable right of all Americans to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that is the contract. That is the agreement between the consenting governed and the U.S. government, U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you see these objections developing, whether it be the divisiveness that creates racism, the divisiveness that creates disintegration, or the divisiveness of partisan politics that looks to preserve their positioning by leveraging social and economic issues to their advantage, that is not representative government. That is not what the American people deserve. And I believe that what Glenn Beck and the Tea Party and Sarah Palin are keying into and keying on is a fundamental truth that the average Americans are starting to realize, and that is this: if they are not going to be a representative, if they're not going to be represented of the will of the people, then the people are going to have to make certain that they enforce their will on and upon the government.
Curtis Greco, our guest here, author of the Blind series, the Blind Vision series. One of the excerpts you have from your book is, quote, I believe that our greatest challenge will be overcoming the risk of defining the discussion as being a choice over competing political ideologies. One of the big political ideologies of our day right now is the Tea Party, which personally I agree with a lot of what they're doing, but I'm scared that they may get too much. And if they start running third-party candidates under the Tea Party parties, then I would strongly disagree with that. But do you think that the Tea Party may be able to revitalize the political system and be able to get better candidates into office that would actually listen to the people?
Well, and again, you know, this is that point that we touched briefly on earlier. This is the great fear of Tea Party movements or third-party movements, just like years ago with Ross Perot and the United We Stand organization. I don't know if you recall that. But, you know, these organizations come up from time to time with this ebb and flow of political discontent and economic collapse in the U.S. And these groups appeal to people. They appeal to the grassroots. They appeal to that 80%, probably 70 to 80% majority of Americans that swing national elections left to right of center. And they find ultimately that they don't get the representation that they deserve, the representation that is implicit in the contract that is the U.S. government's agreement with the consenting government, evidenced by the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. That's what these groups develop and why they develop. And here's the challenge this time with the Tea Party. And this is what I believe needs to be done. And frankly, yeah, that's what part of what the book three looks to help cure, and that is this. If they are not careful, it becomes a conversation over Democrat-Republican. That's not the conversation that needs to be had with Americans. It is not the conversation that needs to be had at the ballot box. What needs to be had is a directive, a specific set of plan, a specific agreement, a specific plan, a dedicated understanding that when you're voted into office, Mr. Senator, Ms. Congressman, this is what you will do. And in book three, we talk about it. We go into specific points, specific stimulus concepts that we talk about that can be looked at that will create a revitalizing movement in governance in the United States. Otherwise, your point is well taken. They simply become at risk. In the absence of a clearly defined objective, they simply become at risk for being co-opted either on one side, the Democratic, who looks at them and says, oh, these are a bunch of racist bigots, and attempts to destabilize them, or they become co-opted by the Republican side that looks at them and says, well, you know, we'll be your buddy in Congress. We'll be your buddy. We'll take on your role. Come join us. Come with us and sweep us into office, and, you know, we're going to bring back the America that you once knew. Well, bad news is that the only reason why the Democratic and Republican parties continue to exist, which, by the way, most people don't realize that the partisanship is not a constitutional mandate. Nowhere in the Constitution does it identify Democrat and Republican. They are not party mandates within the Constitution. These are complete fabrications, complete manufactured infrastructure that controls the political process of this country. And most people don't realize it. But this time, there's the opportunity. The opportunity is to be deliberate, to get a message out that all people can aspire to and agree on as far as the role of government, and begin to require that politicians begin and anew to be representative, which is the role of government. Not a social enterprise, not a social organism, not a social enterprise that dictates what you do from the day you are born to the day you die, but an organism that protects your right as a sovereign individual to be self-determining every moment of your life.
One last question for you here before we let you go. There's been, since this rally, there's been discussion of a strong conservative leader in the Republican Party, or in any party really, who would stand up and make a good opponent against Barack Obama in 2012. And there's rumor that the perfect ticket would be Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin. What do you think about that presidential ticket?
Well, I think that that's absolutely absurd. I think that this is one of those sort of machinations that could develop to destabilize people and diffract folks away from a focused issue, where they almost develop a caricature of reason that makes it almost laughable. Right. I don't know. You know, I don't know Glenn Beck. I've never met the man. I've heard him a few times on the radio. Sarah Palin, of course, you know, you can't miss her. Lovely woman. Certainly appears to have had great success as a governor for the state of Alaska. I think that, you know, if we're going to measure the standard of success and for qualifications for the presidency of the United States, and use Mr. Obama as a benchmark for that, then that pretty much makes just about anybody qualified. So, you know, and so I think that, you know, perhaps Sarah Palin may be a great candidate. I don't know. I have my opinions. I think we'll have to wait to see how that process develops and how she matures in the process over the next few years. Glenn Beck, I don't know. I would have to say that he does a great job as a commentator, and probably, you know, for somebody like that, maybe just quite happy doing what he's doing.
I would agree. I don't see him going from the media into radio and TV and going from that to actually being a politician.
Yeah, I mean, why? I mean, and again, this is part of the caricaturization, the character assassination of these types of folks that are willing to stand up courageously for whatever their motivation is. I don't begrudge anybody who goes out, a Sarah Palin or Glenn Beck, and makes a buck off of a message. I mean, after all, that's what the imperfect messenger talks about as the mission statement of the foundation. It says that when the message is pure and true, it remains so despite the imperfections of the messenger. Everyone has some contribution to make to the process, and everybody should. We, you know, this country will not succeed and will not achieve its highest potential beyond the lowest of any of us. And that's just the way that's the game of life, and that's what we try to talk about in my speaking engagements, in the books, and my media commentaries, is the understanding that it's not a Democrat or Republican conflict. It's an individual conflict. It's an individual understanding about what constitutes the role of government, what constitutes the role an individual plays in the process, and that without which there will always be a missing component that will not complete the process.
Absolutely. Curtis Greco is our guest, author of the Blind Vision series. Curtis, thanks so much for being on with us this morning.
I sure enjoyed the invite, Andy. Always great to get out and speak with folks like yourself who practice what they preach in the action of their daily lives, and I'm quite honored.
Oh, well, thank you.